Hi, I'm Bob Harrington here on Medscape Cardiology and the Heart.org. I'm from Stanford University, and we're here at the American College Cardiology Meetings in Washington, D.C. And we're taking this opportunity to talk with a group of colleagues about a really important issue in cardiovascular medicine, and that is the changing face of the cardiology profession, or maybe we'll just say that more broadly, the changing face of cardiovascular medicine. I'm joined today by three colleagues who are going to lend their insights and thoughts on the topic. And let me start next to me with Dr. Sheila Sani from UCLA, where she is an interventional cardiology fellow and very active in the Women's and Cardiology group here at the ACC and on social media. Next to her is Dr. Fatima Rodriguez. Fatima is the Chief Cardiovascular Fellow at Stanford University. She's interested in disparities of care, particularly amongst Hispanics, and brings a great deal of expertise and insight in preventive cardiology. Thanks for joining us. And finally, on the other side, in some ways, Eric, you and I bookend the old face of cardiology. My good friend and colleague for many years from Duke University and the Duke Clinical Research Institute, Dr. Eric Velasquez, who is a professor of medicine at Duke and the director of cardiovascular imaging. Thanks to all of you for taking the time to join us.
Thank you.
Sheila, I'm going to start with you. Talk a bit from the broad perspective of, first we'll do women in cardiology, the gender issues, and give sort of an overview of how you're thinking of where we're at as a profession and maybe some of the things the college is doing to try to address that.
So I think starting with general cardiology with the American College, the Women's Council, ACC WIC, has done a lot. And we've seen the growth of, it used to be less than 10% of women, now we're seeing more 13, 14% of women. And a lot of papers, most recently a paper came out about the pregnant cardiologist. So there's a lot of writing of documents to help encourage a woman who might be thinking about issues of work-life balance that would deter her. But a big initiative has been how to engage the younger women. You need to catch a girl, you know, in medical school as she's deciding internal medicine or surgery, or even in residency. And today, you know, this year at the ACC, they have a session engaging internal medicine residents. But we've also trying to promote awareness that you can be a woman who's a cardiologist, have work-life balance, and be happy. And that alone, through the use of the hashtag I look like a cardiologist, we've been able to increase awareness about the profession and kind of change the face on social media. And the support of the community in ACC has been huge.
Yeah, and the same thing the surgeons have been doing, it would look like a surgeon. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I do find it very helpful for people around the globe to be tweeting these out. And so for those of you out there, tweet out a picture of yourself, and is it I look or look
it's
like?
I look like a cardiologist, and young women have approached me both on Instagram and Twitter saying that they're studying science, they're very inspired, and that's the kind of inspiration I think that drives that passion you might have. We're so impressionable when we're schooling and residency, and all it takes is somebody saying, you can do it.
Yeah. Fatima, let's build on something Sheila talked about, which is the pipeline or the pool. We know that there are more than 50% of our medical students in the United States today are women. We know that somewhere around 44-45% of internal medicine residents are women. And yet, less than 20% of cardiology fellows are women. Less than 10% of some of the more invasive specialties are women. So, to Sheila's point, where are we losing? Because certainly other invasive, high-demand, 24/7 professions like OBGYN are not having this challenge.
Excellent question. I completely agree with everything that Sheila has said about the importance of starting early in medical school. And I think it all comes down to mentorship and just having people encourage you. You want to have mentors who look like you and kind of do it all, and have people who have children, have a family, and are still successful at research and are women. It's helpful to do it. But at the same time, most of my mentors, as you know, are actually men. You're among them. And you want to have mentors who also encourage you to pursue all your passions, but at the same time know that you may have certain demands on you, or particularly as a young woman in medicine, that you need to be addressed.
Eric, let's move to what men need to do in this area, male leaders. And I think Fatima has described some of the issue about mentorship. When you and I went through training within a few years of each other at Duke, our fellowship was mostly men, although we did have, women over the years, but it was mostly men. And the cath lab where I worked at Duke over the years was mostly men. What did you note along the way, and maybe how of your experience, because we're going to also bring in some other diversity right. issues. How did your experience entering cardiology maybe try to tilt the field a bit?
Well, I think it's wonderful to hear all this great activity because it's certainly needed, and it's perhaps been delayed. My experience over the last 25 years has been one where I've seen incremental changes and certainly improvements, but there are still fundamental challenges around how we organize our training paradigm, how we organize our clinical activities as an academic faculty member or as in practice, where I don't believe we have really looked deeply enough into the challenges that we have to address to make this field be able to attract the best and the brightest women into the halls. And until we do that, I think it's going to be very hard to recruit. Now, my personal just comment hearing you is that I actually would disagree slightly. I think we have to go earlier. We have to be discussing, we have to have individuals interested in medical careers in cardiology, cardiovascular science, looking for them in high school, in college, developing research programs, bringing mentorship opportunities to them. We should be, I think, as leaders in respective universities, we should be going out to these, to our colleges and high schools locally, and trying to identify people. My experience mentoring has been the people that have succeeded on this path have been individuals who've had persistent, continual discussions with individuals and kind of have them bring them along. So I would just highlight that it has to start even earlier than residency.
And I'll add to that just as a personal anecdote. So my mom had rheumatic heart disease. So from high school, I said, I want to be a cardiologist. Fortunately, I did not know how long that path was and what it entailed. But I think that passion early and then finding mentors and folks, her cardiologist was one of my initial mentor, and then in academics kind of sticking with the plan. But along the way, you can definitely get distracted, so you want to make sure you have continued, consistent mentorship, and maybe a mentorship team, which Bob and I have discussed, is more important than having just one mentor.
Yeah, Eric, I want to build on something that you said, and then I want to ask Sheila a couple questions. You said the best and the brightest. One of the reasons that I'm very interested in the topic and have become increasingly engaged in the topic is my concern over the future of our specialty. If we have 50% medical students and only 15% women as cardiologists, there's a huge talent gap that we're leaving on the table. And that bothers me. That means that we're not accepting, just probability alone, the most talented people into our specialty. So that's what we got to work on, change. This is a specialty issue. This is not, yes, there's an equity component, but it's really about we need the best and the brightest. That's what our patients deserve, is the best people offering cardiovascular care.
And women make up more than 50% of the patients.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they
yeah.
need
yeah.
to have representation point, yeah. on this side.
Yeah, yes. That's excellent point. I want to come back to that. Sheila, one of the things that Fatima said is in her early age, she was exposed to cardiovascular mm-hmm. through her mother, mm-hmm. who was a patient. Just before we started this recording, we all had the opportunity to see your dad taking some pictures. He's a cardiologist.
That
had to have been an influence.
I have to say, my mom is also a physician, and it was my mom who would, we have three girls in the house, so I'm in the middle, and she would dress me up during the holidays, and I would do rounds with her. And it was in seeing patients in a chronic setting where I would smile at them, take a history with my mom. I was just little. I would just watch, but that was where I engaged in kind of chronic illness, and I had a passion and an inquisitiveness for science, and that started in high school, and then I pursued that at the School of Health Studies at Georgetown, and then started very early with science and mentorship. About your point about are we losing talent, and what can we do about that, and as males in the field that are at the senior level of their careers, opening doors for women, engaging in mentorship of women who have this challenge. You sit on the WIC committee. That's huge. And also Dr. Sunil Rao in the interventional community, who has spoken up and said, it's a top-down effect. I want work-life balance too as a man. And I think the voices in the room that have always been there are the male voices. And to engage in this issue that we have is huge for us.
Yeah, I think the more we bring sort of that balance into all of our lives, the better the specialty is. As Fatima knows, in our clinic, my kids are dropping by to drop off my car keys, pick stuff up.
Yeah.
And it does show people that there's other things that are going on in
right.
your life. Let's talk a little bit about science, because Eric makes an important point. We have a problem in this country, Fatima, not just about women in science, but all young people in science. An extraordinary figure I saw the other day is that more than 80% or something of finalists in the science fairs in the U.S. now are children of immigrants. Now, to me, that sends two important messages. The importance of attracting the best talent wherever they come from in the globe to the United States. But the second is, what's going on with kids born in the United States who aren't being exposed to science?
I couldn't agree more. So I'm a product of pipeline programs. So I went to a very large public high school in Miami, and all these different after-school programs that Lucent Technology. So they engaged us with science projects, after-school fairs, also opportunities to shadow physicians in the community, and all that attracted me to science at a very early age. And I was very determined to say, you know, they can do it, I can do it. And almost better that I didn't know how long the path was, like I mentioned.
You keep saying that.
Yeah.
You are finished in
I
July.
I am finished, yes.
You're never finished.
You never finished. And that's the beauty of cardiology and kind of lifelong learning. But so going out to the community, and I think maybe even before the high school level, the earlier the better. When I was in Boston as a resident, I worked in a Martha Elliott mentoring program, bringing science to elementary schools and middle schools, and again, showing people, I look like you, I'm from your community, and you know, I'm a internal medicine resident, I'm going to be a cardiology fellow. I think that really helps and resonates with young people.
Eric, one of the things that that you continue to amaze me with is the diversity of what you actually do. And one of your commitments for years has been to global health, and you've spent a lot of time in Africa working to try to improve the workforce there. Do you see some similarities to Sheila's point, opening doors, given opportunities, to Fatima's point, networking, mentoring? Are there some similarities?
Oh, absolutely. I think we have more to learn from these global health opportunities than we have to give. I've always said that. I think the reason to go into global health environments should be a very selfish one for us as American cardiologists. I have seen the impact that even the limited amount of mentoring that I can provide someone who is, you know, thousands of miles away can do. And I, you know, for Shaw, it's not, you know, I haven't done anything, but that kind of discussion, pushing people a little bit, saying, you know, you can do it, let's put together a program, let's go through the steps, let's get to the end. Some of the individuals don't ever have an opportunity to do that with someone who is a cardiologist, or they may not even have cardiologists in their countries or in their communities. So I think I've been very interested in the part of the diversity that focuses on, as we mentioned earlier, the road traveled. I mean, I think it's very critical to engage communities who are underrepresented, particularly socioeconomic status-wise, and have cardiologists in those communities, you know, partake with students and potential applicants to med school, and get them engaged. Because I think there is a tendency, and this is what I've learned from Gold, there is a tendency to say, we can't do this, it's too hard. Because it seems daunting. I mean, when you have an MI in Eldoret, Kenya, that's a daunting experience. We kind of say, well, that's, you know, we can take care of that. You know, we have a cath lab here, you know.
No 24/7 intervention.
I mean, it is a daunting issue, to even supply chains around morphine. So I clearly see why they say, you know, really, we can't do this. And you just have to say, no, you can. And you just have to show it, and you continue to provide that positive guidance. I think a lot of it comes down to just positive guidance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in part, this is the Paul Farmer ethos of really just get out there and do it.
Yeah.
And let's go back to something you brought up earlier, and then you just referred to it again, Eric, and that is the patients that we see. And I'll start down here. Eric pointed out more than half of our patients in cardiovascular medicine are women. Large percentage of patients Hispanic American. Large percentage of African American. Large percent of various countries in Asia that have come to the United States and are our patients. What are you learning through this process of thinking about women, but applied more broadly to other diverse groups?
You know, every time I have a female patient, especially now this year in the cath lab, I thank them and I ask them if they would share their story on UCLA's media page, which is a great patient portal. And the reason for that is because I want another woman who has heart disease to hear their story, that they got an angiogram for chest pain. And I extend that to my minority patients as well. I tell them that because of their ethnic race, whether it's Hispanic or African American, they're at risk for stroke, or they're at risk for high blood pressure if they don't watch what they eat. And I think that that helps reinforce it, not just to them, but then to their community and their friends. So I engage them in the issues we're facing.
Fatima, you've done a lot of work, original research work, on understanding some of the disparities of care amongst Hispanic subgroups. And what are you learning through these discussions, thinking about women, but more broadly, certainly in the Bay Area where you practice, very diverse patient population?
Absolutely. So I completely agree with Sheila that it's about patient engagement. A lot of the issues that I'm interested in from a research perspective are around metabolic syndrome and prevention and cardiovascular prevention that are unique sometimes in the Hispanic population, also in the South Asian population. So just by having that discussion with the patient, engaging them after their treatment, if they can go and speak to their community, get family members screened, saying, you know, you have these risk factors, but you also have a brother who's 40 years old and has the same constellation of risk factors. Bring them in, have them come to clinic. And you know that we often see entire families in clinic, and it's one of the best parts of our job, just, again, using us as a platform to get engagement in the community.
Yeah, Eric's smiling because he thinks of me as a cath lab interventional cardiologist.
He's transformed.
Fatima's helped transform
me. I would like to see this picture.
To a preventive cardiologist.
You should take a video.
Eric, from your perspective, and I like the notion of the distance traveled. My colleague Abraham Verghese uses that phrase all the time. Talk to me about your clinical practice and how you think about these issues.
Initially, I went into community health centers. You know, we started a program there. I'm focused on heart failure. I'm a heart failure cardiologist predominantly, and increasing access. But I realized that that wasn't enough. You have to actually... It has to be sustained. That's a very important component. I'd like to say it just can't be a one and done kind of affair here. It has to be a sustained contribution to community to increase people's awareness of disease processes and recognize that there are people like them who are willing to help them. And one of the reasons why we have to strive to increase the diversity among our colleagues in cardiology is that for whatever reason, maybe cultural, it may just be human nature, but patients want to see physicians that look like them, that talk like them, that can relate to their life issues. And I think that's sometimes an area where we particularly fail, particularly in African-American communities and in Latino communities, where they don't feel that someone understands them, even though we all try to really hard. As an administrative leader at Duke for certain things, I feel very proud that, our section is the most diverse among our, in cardiology. We have probably the largest group of women and largest African-American representation and Latino representation, but it's not a lot. I really have strived for at least 50%. Yeah. And that is distinctly different than other sections, and that's not because they're not doing a good job. It's just harder, perhaps, because cardiovascular imaging has historically been, there has been more flexibility. You've mentioned several times, it takes a long time to train. You have other life expectancies, experiences. You want to have children. You want to have family, life balance. Cardiovascular imaging provides perhaps an easier way to get there, but it has to be obtained in every subspecialty. And I think that's something that we need to figure out how to do.
Go ahead. I'll give you the final word.
I wanted to say that because we've alluded, you mentioned imaging and you've mentioned the length of practice. So I started out wanting to do cardiovascular imaging, and you brought up my dad. And so he wanted to probably protect me from the perils of the cath lab and the long hours. And he couldn't, he tried, and I did a lot of imaging research, but I loved the cath lab. And I think that yes, it takes a long time to train in cardiology, and it's hard work for all of us, but we have to hook the young generation's passion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if you're passionate about something, then it doesn't matter the long hours. And that's really where I think having a strong role model of my dad has helped, that he has supported my passion for interventional cardiology. And that's what you're getting at, is right. Really engaging the community.
Cardiovascular imaging is not a fallback.
Yes.
It should be a goal.
Exactly.
And I always, that's one of the comments points I bring up when I interview someone for a position. Do you want to do this, or is this because you don't want to do something else? If you want to do something else, house. Let's make sure you can have
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And I know we're running out of time, but I'll just add that that sometimes you have to step back and look, go back home and step away from academia to say, you know, what a privilege it is that our job every day is to take care of patients and to improve our body of knowledge through research. So we shouldn't forget that and take that for granted.
Yeah, that was a great wrap-up. I want to thank the three of you. Incredibly important topic about diversity in the changing face of cardiology, whether we're talking about our patients, we're talking about our colleagues. Progress being made, but a lot of work left to do. And our patients warrant it, the research warrants it, and it's exciting time for trying to make some progress. I want to thank you, Sheila,
thank you.
Fatima, Eric. I'm Bob Harrington, and thank you for listening.